So this evening on the stream of free radio at freakradio.org, it is indeed another edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, but we're going to have to do it, well, a shorter one this time, because I've been struggling with the computer for 2 hours after a lengthy Huff meeting, and I'm fading out, but we're also losing the opportunity to do it as far as the time factor goes. So be patient with me. This is going to be a shorter show than usual, and it's also going to include, I think, a flashback to cover some of the space that we couldn't cover with material, which I have, but I just haven't got time to put in. It's going to be, presumably, added to the show on Sunday, so don't despair. Any case, going to be a lot of stuff. We're going to look into the city mangler, Matt Huffaker. He's the guy who runs the city, highly paid and highly dangerous, who has made an announcement to the city council about impending doom in the benchlands, which he likes to do and give an upbeat flavor to. And you'll hear what he has to say very briefly to the city council. And it ain't much. But first, let's hear our characteristic theme song, and we'll get into it, as well as a few bits from Berkeley and People's Park.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
In the Tuesday City Council meeting on the 9th, I guess, of August, was held in the afternoon and evening. Actually, just the afternoon. I don't think they have much. They may have had one bit of an evening session. I didn't hear the whole thing, but I did hear the city mangler's report, and you're going to be able to hear that momentarily. One of the things that I noted about it, as usual, and I mentioned probably as usual, is they do not provide any opportunity for public comment on really the most important report from the most powerful individual and the most highly paid individual in the city. And that, to me, is, it certainly confirms my suspicions that they couldn't really care less what the community thinks about it, particularly since they don't usually have a lot of other things to do. At this particular meeting, they had almost nothing to do. And when oral communications came along at 5:30, that's where you get to talk about something, anything you want, if it's not been talked about on the agenda, which usually is everything of significance. You can for 2 minutes, unless you get a hold of them. I think it's before Sunday 5 o'clock, and implore the mayor to give you group speaking time, or ask the mayor. I mean, why you know, over dramatize it? But it's a cutback from what it previously was, 5 minutes for group, and it's also anything that you say to city council is to a certain extent problematic, because I tend to get the feeling myself, and maybe it's just with respect to me, but I think it's with regard to a lot of the issues I'm concerned about, ranging from police abuse to gentrification to human rights to militarism in the police department to homeless civil rights. They don't want to spend any time addressing abuses around those issues or concerns about them. It's just not really in their playbook. So it doesn't really matter. But nonetheless, we speak on. I spoke at the oral communications period, and so did a few other people. You're going to hear that. But first, you get to hear Matt Huffaker, the city manager. Now, before we hear the Mangler's very resource-poor, elliptical, facts-scarce report, you must remember that one of the big concerns in the Benchlands has been that Huffaker was promising to evict them all by mid-July, or at the end of July, or in the middle of July. It wasn't clear. And rumors were abounding, I was told, by several folks at the Food Not Bombs meal a month ago, that they were worried they were about to be evicted, that they were told by Jeremy Leonard it would be August 1st. They had to get out of there, accept his offers to go up to the Overlook campground or the armory. And this isn't what Jeremy said to me. This is what others who claimed that they said to him. I have nothing specific to report from Jeremy. I've written him letters requesting some more specifics, and I can't get a response. He's referred me instead to the city mangler, who calls himself the city manager, Matt Huffaker. And Huffaker was invited to come to the next meeting of the Union of the Homeless, which at last, finally, has begun to hold meetings again. It held one in the Resource Center for Nonviolence. Gosh, it was on Monday. And it's going to be holding another one next Monday on the 15th. And there were actual homeless people in attendance. I don't know if they characterized themselves as homeless union members, but they certainly were pissed about the Benchlands threats, about bad services at some of the other shelters, and about the general condition of authorities regarding information around what's coming next. So we'll see, although I'm in no way optimistic that Huffaker is going to come to this Monday the 15th meeting, but that doesn't mean you listeners, you certainly can come if you'd like. And we talked about that today at the Huff meeting, which there were about four homeless folks who showed up, though I don't think there were any Benchlands residents. But there were numerous Benchlands residents who came to the Monday Union of the Homeless meeting. And there was an invitation, as they say, extended by Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs and Alicia Cool of the Union of the Homeless to Huffaker and his lieutenants to come on down on Monday and explain things. In fact, I think I'll read McHenry and Alicia Cool's letter. But first, let's hear what old Matt Huffaker, or young Matt Huffaker, I think he's younger than I am, has to say about this, about homelessness generally and the Benchlands specifically.
And then lastly, I wanted to provide some brief updates on our ongoing homelessness response work. At our next meeting, the council will receive a quarterly homelessness response update with significantly more details on the wide range of work that our homelessness response team and all of our departments, frankly, are working collectively on. But I did want to provide some brief highlights based on some of that work that's underway. That includes the ongoing work around the oversized vehicle ordinance. As the council knows, that moved to a appeal process and hearing in front of the Coastal Commission on July 14th. The commission at that point in time, based on Coastal Commission staff recommendation, found substantial issue with some of the elements of the coastal permit and ordinance. As a result, that means that a de novo hearing will be set later on this year where the commission will act on that permit. That gives us time, staff time, to work with Coastal Commission staff to try to resolve some of the concerns that were raised by both staff and the commission. And our hope is that when we reach the de novo hearing, that permit will get over the finish line and we can move towards full implementation of the ordinance. In the meantime,
before we hear about the meantime, which a mean time indeed it is. Two things. First of all, the Coastal Commission's refusing to rubber stamp the OVO, the Oversized Vehicle Ordinance, as it had did 5 or 6 years ago when the another ordinance, very similar, came before it, really may indicate that they're abandoning the whole thing. Reggie Meisler predicted that there would be an immediate revamping of the ordinance, that they would throw out the 100-foot limitation on during the 24-hour period, which was one of the chief hooks on which the commission hung their rejection of the ordinance. And even the staff of the Coastal Commission, which initially was giving the thumbs up to this repressive ordinance, backed down when the ACLU pointed out, look, you're going to remove 54% of the parking space in Santa Cruz for OVOs. It's obviously has a massive impact on the coastal zone, even though you claim homeless vehicles at night isn't worth a shit or considering. Nonetheless, this is, because after all, we're talking about mom and pop and folks visiting businesses and so forth. That's not how the ACLU put it. They were, in fact, focusing on homeless civil rights, but also upon the denial of coastal access to the general public. Huffaker did not bother to mention that there was no action after the Coastal Commission made a similar decision in the summer of 2016 and said, this must go to there's a substantial question here, it must go to a de novo hearing, meaning a whole new hearing before the entire Coastal Commission. We're taking it out of the hands of the local coastal body because this question is significant enough for us to look at. In fact, in that point, there was just a very skeptical and hostile attitude when I presented my concerns to the Coastal Commission back in 2016. And it was quickly the city's attempt to do the same thing 6 years later was also quickly dumped this time as well. And so the issue then became, where is the appeal in 2016? If it was such a good ordinance then, why didn't they do something about it then? The answer was probably, although who knows what the inside story is, they feared it was going to be definitively rejected and set a precedent. Although I think for my money, they did set a precedent. It's just that our local coastal commission didn't have the ovaries or the balls to impose on it as an enforcement agency. And the county went ahead with its anti-OVO or its anti-vehicular ordinance, its oversized vehicle restrictions, or it's actually RV restrictions. I attempted to, and I'm still trying to find out what kind of negotiations, or I would say collusion, might even say conspiracy, happened between the local coastal commission and the sheriff's office, the county council. That's the legal guy who justifies what the board of supervisors does and the ordinances they pass, because the coastal commission has said you can't ban these vehicles unless you have a place for them to go. And also you need to have a showing that there's a real criminal problem with people parking at night, which calls for service. Mere calls for service stats does not show, because a lot of the calls for service are concerns about for people who just don't want to have RVs around. That makes them nervous, you know. Like them black people and them Chinese. You never could tell. They're very sneaky, I hear, you know. So that seems to be likely to come up again. And it's a little hard to fathom what Huffaker is really saying. Is he saying that they are indeed seriously going to go ahead and take the ordinance and challenge it anew, to take it up to the higher body just as it is? Reggie Meisler had thought they were going to have to dump part of the ordinance at least, make some changes and come back, which might involve going through the whole process again, costing people who want to fight it $700 to appeal it. A nice little aspect to the city's series of barriers to people who are trying to inject a little sanity into the political process in Santa Cruz. It it could mean that they are going to do what they did before, that is, say nothing, and the ordinance will just sit there, and they'll let the police and the sheriffs do what they're doing and hope that nobody complains too loudly. Now, because of all the hubbub raised, I was the only one who really challenged the ordinance in 2016. This time it was the ACLU, the Disability Rights Coalition, Santa Cruz Cares, and numerous supporters of homeless civil rights were also supportive of the appeal of against this OVO ordinance. It may be that the sheriffs and the city police and the volunteer police workers who want to go enforce the signs of restricting parking in the coastal zone that haven't gotten legitimate permits but have been there for years anyway and have served to harass and hassle people in their vehicles, it could be that these folks will, that the critics will keep such a close eye on authorities that they would be a little more nervous about being so cavalier about ticketing people when they have no sanction to do so, and they have no real legal basis for doing so. In fact, when they're doing so against the findings of the Coastal Commission. But it's also true that, I got to say this, that the housed folks who and their interest in this civil rights issue for homeless people is often, it comes and goes. And there has been no, for example, true monitoring cop watch group set up that I'm aware of. There are some really vigorous cop watchers like Abby Samuels and other people who call Huff or the Union of the Homeless report to Keith McHenry's Food Not Bombs. But there's no real systematized monitoring that keeps an eye on what they do. So they may feel they can just ignore the whole issue as far as seeking a coastal permit and do what they need to do. They won't try to enforce this particular ordinance, but they'll act as though the ordinance is there using other things like parking signs and other laws. This is what they have been doing regarding the sleeping ban, the old sleeping ban, which was dumped by the Martin versus Boise court decision, which said you can't ticket someone for sleeping unless you've got a place for them to sleep. That didn't matter. Andy Mills, the old police chief, simply said, oh, we're giving you a ticket instead for being in a closed area, giving you a ticket for, trespassing. We're giving you a ticket for blocking the sidewalk. Your ticket is for public nuisance. There's a variety of things they can give a ticket for, unless I think maybe repeating myself on one of those. But that's what they can do also with the oversized vehicle stuff, or if they want to get rid of RVs, oversized or not. So another thing to note is that this idea of pushing everything ahead 2 weeks is what the previous people in charge of the so-called homeless camping solutions, such as Lee Butler and Susie O'Hara, did all the time. They were constantly saying, we're working on this stuff. We're going to come back. We got another thing next. You'll get a full report later on. And this is a way of course, avoiding the fact that they have nothing that they really can do as far as expanding, providing real shelter for people. That indicates a wise use of the money that they've gotten. And it behooves the rest of us to rattle their cages, pound on their doors, camp on their doorsteps until we get some answers. Or you guys, anyway. You go camp, I'll report the news. Maybe I'll come by and interview you. So there's that. But that's the kind of direct action I think that needs to be done, unless you want to actually just go sit in people's offices until they give you some straight story. There's some discussion about doing that with Robert Ratner, the county guy. Anyway, let's get back to the wise words of Matt Huffaker.
Continue to prioritize establishing the Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3 safe parking programs. That's not waiting on the outcome of this de novo hearing. We know it's important that we have safe sleeping options for all individuals that may need one, and staff is continuing to make progress on that work.
But that's not really very specific, is it? Nor have I heard any really good reports about these Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3 program. There is no Tier 1 program, as far as any police officers have told me. And I was, you know, I actually talked to the big cheese himself, Escalante, when he was holding his gala national night out. And he didn't know, and others didn't seem to know either. They kept sort of shuffling around. And so there probably is, in theory, a space in the police department parking lot. And it may be also, and I've heard from Huff members who've kept an eye on this, that there are some RVs that are being left alone that are parked in a couple of the parking lots designated for the Tier 2 space. So, but the number of spaces available has nothing to do with the number of vehicles is actually out there, as I understand from just, I haven't counted them. And I haven't seen a study about it, but I don't think the city has either. If they have, you don't find it in their reports, or I haven't seen it in their reports. So that's to suggest that they're working on it, everything's fine. It's the same kind of they're there, the go to sleep, all is well sort of commentary. At least that's how I tend to regard it.
Lastly, I wanted to also just note and provide a quick update regarding the closure and restoration work around San Lorenzo Park and the Benchlands. This is a tremendous amount of work occurring across several departments working on the planned closure and restoration of the park. The first phase will include the fencing and closure of the upper park.
This is one of the few specifics, and he actually, I think, gives a specific date where this is going to happen, although the upper park isn't really the residence of people who are there generally. I mean, I think as they crammed more and more people in from the other campsites that they bulldozed, some people did move to the upper park before they were moved away by police. Again, I don't have a lot of clear specifics on this, but that's the kind of impression I've gotten. That's what I recollect from the last couple of weeks. But notice also the idea that the issue here is the restoration of the park rather than the fate of hundreds of people, not just because you might give a shit or not give a shit about their fate, but what that means for the health, peace, and safety of their interactions with the rest of the community and the health of the rest of the community if they're just dumped, which is really the only alternative, which is has been the go-to solution every time the Benchlands has been cleared in the last 4 years. And that's happened a number of times.
That will be followed with fencing and closure of the Benchlands itself. And the plan is to move through a phased closure and relocation of the campers that are currently residing in the park. That is contingent, of course, on also concurrently standing up additional shelter.
So he's trying to have it both ways. He's not giving you a specific date yet, though I believe that is going to come out, at least as far as the upper part goes. It's the language of prior city managers or homeless czars about what's going to happen. Vague language that enables them to sort of say, well, we didn't really promise it, but we were certainly aiming. We did the best we could without clarifying exactly what really was possible, the actual number of shelter spaces actually available that were available, the number of people that were actually going to need them, and the number of people that were going to be simply dumped and told to fend for themselves, I guess providing more jailing opportunities.
Resources as part of that effort. So that work is ongoing. There's significant work happening every day.
That work is ongoing. There is significant work happening every day.
So in concert with our colleagues at the county.
in concert with our colleagues at the county, but nothing specific.
And Larry Amwali, our homelessness response manager, will have more details on that when he brings a quarterly update at your next...
We just don't have the quarterly update now for some reason, or even any indication of what's actually happening.
Meeting. That's all I have for now. Thank you for your time.
So he actually doesn't give any dates, but I believe he is prodded briefly by Justin Cummings.
May I ask a question?
Yes. Councilmember Kalantari Johnson, and then Councilmember Cummings.
Great, thank you. When we get an update on August 23rd, will staff or can staff speak to the point in time count numbers that were just released and what the county's response to it is? As I understand, they heard about that today at their board meeting.
Yes, in fact, thanks for that question, Councilmember Kalantari Johnson. So just last week, the county released the results of the first point in time count that had been conducted since pre-pandemic. We do intend on providing an update to the council and the community as part of the quarterly response update. As you noted, the board received an update today.
So they intend to provide a response. And so they're hard at work, you see, but they just haven't got anything now, just as they didn't really have anything over the last 9 months as to where people were going to be going. Whether that problem was they're being flooded out or they decided they were going to mow down all the other campgrounds. It just, for some reason, it was something they were going to talk about later. It's okay. Things are in process. Things are in progress.
Thank you, Councilmember Kalantari Johnson. Councilmember Cummings?
Yeah, similarly, I'm wondering if there's any information on if the county is going to be standing up any additional services. I mean, I know that they just shut down the armory, and that has resulted in a lot of the people who were there who didn't have a place to go now either going to the Benchlands or potentially other points in the city. And it just be worth understanding, you know, how much shelter the county is providing currently versus the city, so that I think people can be aware of what role the city's playing, what role the county's playing, and you know, if it's disproportionately that the city's taking on a lot of this, I think it might be worth a conversation. How do we try to see how other jurisdictions, in particular the county, can step up more to help us with shelter?
And this is actually very familiar coming from Justin Cummings, because this was the basis on which he allowed the demolition of the Ross camp 3 years ago. And he broke away from the coalition, the Progressive Coalition. He destroyed it by joining with the Matthews-Myers faction. His big deal was he was going to get on the county 2x2 committee, and it was the county's responsibility to provide all these problems. And if the Ross camp had to be dispersed, or else the county would not go along with this stuff. And I don't know the ins and outs or the validity or the accuracy of that particular claim, but I know this attempt to avoid responsibility and look to the county, this business of throwing the ball back and forth between the county and the city, although I don't know, I haven't been following the county carefully, so I can't say if they're doing exactly the same thing, but they certainly are abandoning their program up at the armory, and the city is supposedly picking it up. But the people who were dumped out of the armory, it was kind of a scandal. You may have heard some of the interviews I did about, from a worker there, for instance, who was just angry at the behavior of the county and the way it was running the armory and the way it was dumping a bunch of disabled people out without any kind of resources and telling them, well, you know, in a month the city may be picking it up for you. But with no real increase in shelter, no significant increase, and certainly not significant enough to house people in the Benchlands, much less the rest of the homeless in the community generally. So, there's that.
Yeah, thanks for the comment, Councilmember Cummings. And we have been meeting with our county colleagues on a regular basis. We have emphasized the fact that standing up additional emergency shelter is and will continue to be one of our top priorities.
So they are doing a lot of emphasizing and meeting and so forth with the county colleagues. And I guess that in a way, this is maybe what Cummings is saying. Do something so we won't be blamed. Please don't let the it's the county's fault. Right, right, right. And maybe he's supplying him with the answer that he wants, but he's not giving an answer to the specific question about numbers of people. Now, I think this comes a little bit later. You at least get one date that he does speak about. Let's listen in.
We are pursuing housing on several fronts, and that includes home key projects to try to access some of the state funding, pursuing additional permanent supportive housing opportunities. Those are all important.
They're looking for more money, but we're not going to get any idea of how they spend it. At least we haven't so far, really.
And we have a desperate need for additional shelter spaces throughout the county. So,
and there certainly is a desperate need. That's why they're demolishing and clearing the benchlands where the priority seems to be restoring the park.
That those conversations are ongoing. We've stressed that importance with the county. And
ongoing conversations, stress that importance. This is the rhetoric to help make you think something is happening, to give the illusion of progress without any substance.
We will continue to do so.
Thank you.
And Cummings, of course, has no follow-up. In other words, instead of saying, what do you mean? You mean, in other words, you're talking to, when was the last conversation you had with them? What are they promising to give you? What kind of services are they offering? What, is there any accounting for the amount of money they got? These are questions that the good Justin Cummings could have asked, but didn't. And so there's not a peep from Sandy Brown saying, can you please give us a report as to how many folks are going to be left without housing, what the actual number of shelter spaces is, and how many people do you actually count in RVs and throughout the county? How many people are being ticketed under criminalization of the homeless ordinances? These actually were questions that were asked 3 years ago and were demanded of the city attorney. And the city attorney actually presented a report, but it was never really publicized or discussed in the fall of 2019, because, of course, the focus was then on recalling Glover and Crone, the two council members who made up the activist section of the progressive majority when there was a progressive majority. Let's take a musical break.
I am no friend to the fathers and mothers, and I am no friend to the sisters and brothers. And I am no friend to the weak and distressed. And I am no friend to the poor and oppressed. But I'm a friend of the fetus, a friend of incomparable worth. I'm a friend of the fetus, right up to the moment of birth. Once it's a baby, I will not go near it. I will not feed it, and I will not rear it. And when it is crying, I won't even hear it. For I have no room in my heart for a human. But I'm a friend of the fetus, a friend of incomparable worth. I'm a friend of the fetus, right up to the moment of birth. I will not care for it, I won't be there for it, I will not weep for it, I won't lose sleep for it, I'll back away from it, I won't go gray from it, I will not pray for it, and I won't pay for it. But I'm a friend of the fetus, a friend of incomparable worth, not comparable, I'm a friend of the fetus. Right up to the moment of birth, let it get a job. Right up to the moment of birth.
And that was Dave Lippman, Friend of the Fetus. You can also catch some of the video on the DaveLippman.com. That's LIPPMAN, in case you're interested, maybe playing a few more of his songs if we have any time. Here's a letter that Keith McHenry and Alicia Kuhl wrote to Matt Huffaker. I think I mentioned it earlier, kind of stemming from the meeting we had on Monday with about 25 or 30 people met, including almost 20 homeless folks, and many of them from the Benchlands, to discuss what to do next. And again, as I said before, next Monday, the 15th, is going to be a follow-up meeting. And there is also, I want to point out, there is a Joy Schindeldecker for Mayor launch party on Friday. Joy is a Huff member who's been coming to a number of Huff meetings, and she's also part of Santa Cruz Cares. I think she's a part of Love Boat, too, although I'm probably got a few of these organizations mixed up, as well as Sanitation for the People. Is that the right? I don't know, but she's concerned with a lot of these issues, has been fighting or standing up for and serving homeless folks in the last couple of years, and she's running for mayor. I've advised against it. I don't think running for mayor usually is such a hot idea, although it can provide a momentary platform. It tends to take away your energy, and if you get elected, it really takes away your energy, and it often just takes away your integrity. So, but here's what she writes. This, first of all, the launch party is happening tomorrow, if you're listening to this on the 11th, August 12th, 2022, at the Loudon Nelson Center from 5:30 to 7:30. Please join us. Now, I'm hoping that they'll finally have opened the Loudon Nelson bathrooms to the community by then. I guess you can claim you're part of the event, so you have a right to take a piss, instead of it's just being a privilege to pee, as the Loudon Nelson Center has been behaving for the last 2 or 3 years. Skidmark Bob, you should be ashamed of yourself. He's one of the caretakers of the Loudon Nelson. Anyway, her webpage, I'm not looking at, but I'm looking at a reminder that this is happening again at 5:30 to 7:30 tomorrow at the Loudon Nelson. She's running for mayor as part of a working class movement, she writes. They want to increase participatory democracy across our communities, hold council members and city decision makers accountable for the positive aspirational policies and declarations that they have made, and contest the policies and practices that are unjust to maintain the status quo, break through the polarized rhetoric, continual blocking and real estate fingers in every pot, and instead work together with us for us to improve the lives of the majority Santa Cruzans, the underpaid and overworked tenants, essential workers, teachers, nurses, students, young people, people who care. Let's build our power. Let's have more grassroots and less astroturf. Nice rhetoric, and I would normally say, however, Joy has been making public statements on specific issues like the oversized vehicle ordinance, which mean a hell of a lot more than campaign rhetoric usually. It's what that kind of action is, stuff that I appreciate. I don't have a lot of specifics for you today other than her work on the oversized vehicle ordinance and, I suppose, sanitation for the people, though I don't have the particular achievements there. But she's been involved for at least a year. I've seen her at these meetings, putting her in her time and energy. So I realize coming to meetings is one thing and doing things that are real is something else. But I'm encouraging you to, well, certainly consider the issues she supports. Here's this letter from Keith and Alicia that I want to read. It has come to our attention that you intend to start a closure of the Benchlands encampment located at San Lorenzo Park. To avoid speculation and to gain clarification, could you please provide the specific plan that you have in place for that closure? 1. What date do you intend to start the process? 2. How many people will be moved and what spaces and capacities do you have the ability to relocate individuals? 3. What will happen to those that you don't have alternative locations for? 4. Please provide any information that you have regarding the closure plans. We request this information so that we may continue to provide services to these individuals and assist them during this difficult process. Please respond with your plans before our next meeting on Monday. Thank you, Alicia Cool, Keith McHenry, and that was sent out on Tuesday. And Alicia Cool added, or perhaps both of them added, The people living at the Benchlands voted last night to invite you to hear how they are impacted by the city's policies so you can provide workable solutions to the crisis. Please join us, this is to Matt Huffaker, at the meeting, our meeting, Monday, August 15th, 2022, starting at 6 p.m. at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, 612 Ocean Street, Santa Cruz. And Huffaker did reply, and this is what he replied. Let's see, here we go. Good afternoon, Keith. This was on the 9th, so he replied on the same day that he got the letter. Good afternoon, Keith. Fencing and closure of the upper park will begin next week. So that would be presumably on the 15th. Following the closure of the upper park, limited fencing will be installed in the lower park, that's the Benchlands, dividing the Benchlands into segments. Closure of each segment of the Benchlands will be contingent on additional sheltering locations coming online. Now, before we start parsing these sentences, why would you put up a fence if not to impede the movement from one place to another? In other words, if they're closing a part of the Benchlands, why fence it off? A, to stop people perhaps from coming into that area, or possibly B, to stop people from leaving that area. It seemed like, oh, well, you just want to let people know how far this is going to go. But you don't have to put a fence up to do that. You can, oh, I don't know, draw a chalk line or a line in the area with some kind of substance so you can see what it is, or, you know, put a long string across the area, I don't know, or a rope so you can, on the ground, you don't have to have a fence. But he's going to put up a fence. Closure of each segment of the Benchlands will be contingent on additional sheltering locations coming online. And this, of course, is, if true, it sounds very appropriate. It sounds like it's in line with both the law and humane considerations. But there aren't any such sheltering locations. So what he's really saying is there won't be any closure of the Benchlands until there are sheltering locations. He's putting it a little more, mildly, one might say deceptively. I don't know if it's deceptive, but it's contingent on additional sheltering locations coming online. Now, you might say he's trying to walk a careful line, Matt Huffaker is, not wishing to offend the bigots who want everybody cleared out immediately, or alarm the people living there who want to be able to relax at the, and not have their property at risk, and they have enough time defending it from thievery and rats in the Benchlands. And again, the next sentence that Huffaker responds is, our goal is to provide an alternative sheltering option to anyone in the park who wants shelter. Notice the words goal. This is straight out of the textbook, or I should say the playbook, of Susie O'Hara. The goal. So in other words, it's not a commitment to provide alternative sheltering, just a goal. I suppose this is so he cannot be accused of making outrageously false statements, and maybe he feels a certain honesty is required for his own integrity. I don't know. I mean, that would be nice. I would frankly consider it unlikely to have taken this job, given the limited resources, and then put your reputation behind it, does not speak well of the person who does that, in my view. Anyway, he continues to write, the homelessness response team will be providing their quarterly homeless response update at the council's next meeting, which we heard before, including additional details and updates on the planned closure and restoration of San Lorenzo Park. This seems to imply he either doesn't know what this is or he won't say. So either it hasn't been cooked up yet, or he hasn't been let in on it, even though he's the highest official, or he simply doesn't want to tell us. Why? Broadly speaking, as mentioned above, the closure will occur in phases, so as not to alarm the natives. You want to heat up the pot with the lobster in it. You do it slowly by degrees. this is perhaps, I don't know, a more alarmist kind of analysis of this. But it also seems to be a way of hitting one group off against another and saying, see, it's not going to happen to you, so don't get excited. Just happening to these guys over here, you know, those guys, you don't have to worry about them. As additional sheltering locations become available. Where they are, no man or woman knows. There are plenty of places that could be, but they have not been proposed. City and county outreach teams are in the process of connecting with every individual. We're spending our money not on developing places for people to go and funding nonprofits that might actually provide such spaces and setting up a permit process so it could be done, funding service-providing organizations like Brent Adams Footbridge Services. Nah, we aren't going to do that. Instead, we're in the process of connecting with every individual in the camp and working to develop a rehousing plan for those interested in alternative shelter. And this, again, is, seems to me to be an ominous phrase that may indicate that this is really what they're going to be doing, is suggesting that those who don't go to the offered inadequate shelter are going to be called service resistant. And that is why I've suggested to people in various flyers, when asked, will you go to the shelter? They say not no, but if they don't have to say yes either, unless that's what they really want to do, but instead to say, I have to talk to my service provider about it. I have to consider it. I have to hear more details and more information about it. And that's a way of hopefully avoiding being checked off as a service-resistant person who is no longer subject to the protections of the Martin versus Boise court decision. Let's have another musical break. And to give you a head start, here are the lyrics. Imagine you have health care. It's easy if you try. Freedom to choose your doctor. No extra stuff to buy. Imagine first-class treatment when you're unemployed. Imagine care for everyone. No greedy middleman. No premium. No copay. A single payer plan. Imagine long-term illness, but you don't lose your home. You may say that I'm a dreamer, but we have a commonwealth. I hope someday we'll join up and the world can live in health. Can you say universal? I wonder if you can. Now try comprehensive. Does that sound like a plan? It's worked for years in Europe, Canada, and Japan. You may say I'm a dreamer, that we have a commonwealth. I hope someday we'll join them and the world can live in health. So now I'm going to play a bit.
But it would be cheaper for us to just all get all the health care we needed and just take insurance industries completely out of the equation.
Imagine you have health care. It's easy if you try. Freedom to choose your doctor. No extra stuff to buy. Imagine first-class treatment when you're unemployed. Imagine care for everyone. No greedy middleman. No premium, no copay. A single payer plan. Imagine long-term illness, but you don't lose your home. You may say I'm a dreamer, but we have a commonwealth. I hope someday we'll join up and the world can live in health. Can you say universal? Can I try comprehensive? 'Cause that sound like a plan. They work for years in Europe, Canada, and Japan. Let's say I'm a dreamer, but we have a common ground. I hope someday we'll join them.
The world can live in hell. So now I'm going to play a bit of the meeting last Monday on the 8th at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, where people who are outside spoke up angrily about conditions. Here's a woman in a wheelchair who I didn't catch all of what she had to say, but here's some of it. Unfortunately, much of this is inaudible, so I'm going to have to scour the tape, see if I can find something that is playable. Or you can come to the next meeting on Monday and hear people yourself with your own ears as to what's going on. Question them, see if you think that's authentic, see if you think that what they're saying rings true and is important, and speak up yourself on those issues. I'm going to try a little bit more of this because some of it is more audible, but it has its problems.
People had to get up in the morning and go to work, and they had to sit there and wait for the shuttle. And sometimes they don't have drivers for that shuttle, so some people have got fired for not showing up on work on time, and there's no excuse or anything with them saying, oh, well, we're sorry, we couldn't get a driver for today.
And what he's talking about is that there is no access to the overlook shelter and the armory shelter except by shuttle. You can't go in and out except on the schedule of the shuttle. And if you can't get to work, well, it's tough shit for you, I guess. But Matt Huffaker said they're going to work on that issue.
And they end up with one shuttle.
Are people waiting out?
I've seen people miss their methadone things in the morning because when I work for downtown street team, our shed's right there, the methadone thing. And I can see every time some of our workers, they show up late because the man is always getting late. Yeah. Because the first thing that they do is in the morning, the handicapped and the disabled are the ones that go down first to downtown. But the ones that work, they have to wait for the next bus or the next shot.
And then Alicia, you have?
You know, I just want to say that all of these stories are hugely important as a way, you know, if reported or somehow transmitted to the general public, as a way to appeal to their sense of compassion and empathy. And that's you know, I kind of feel bad that we're not reporting this stuff right now, these stories right now. But regardless, I feel like there's also the way to appeal to the general public's sense of self-preservation, because we've seen over the past several years multiple examples of massive housing loss for a whole city because of the dry conditions and the high winds. And you push these people, and you know, fires have happened in the benchlands, and the fire department comes in and they put it out, and it's not that big of a deal. But pushing all these people into the Hoganet, you know, whether it's intentional or accidental, on a windy, dry day, it's going to just wipe out half of the actual houses in Santa Cruz. And so to see how blind the city council and the city managers are to that logical consequence of taking these people who have nowhere else to go and saying, get out. You can use these shelters that nobody wants to use because they're brutal, and they have conditions, and they don't allow pets, and blah, blah. And what are they going to do? They're going to go where they can, which is the Hoganet and other forested areas, which are completely dry. And yeah, the authorities can pretend to close those off. They did that 2 years ago during the big fires and last year. But still, people will find their ways in because what else are they going to do? So I just feel like that's a strong argument to say, no, the Benchlands is actually manageable and a safer place for these people to be than out there in the woods.
Sure, yeah.
So now, because I am rushed, I'm going to have to play, and I don't think it's entirely without good cause, and I think it's also useful to consider. This is from August 11th and 12th of 2015, I believe it is, and it's, I played it initially on the 13th of August in the Bathrop Spears Broadside show that was actually when the days when we actually had callers and so forth and a real radio station. But lots of audio of the Freedom Sleepers, the group that Conscience in Action and Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and Legal Defense, and a variety of other groups got together, Funa Bombs, to sleep in front of City Hall demanding a change in the sleeping ban, and eventually at least getting a vote, but not getting a change, but actually paving the way, I think, for a change. So that's what you're going to hear now. A lot of it is self-explanatory, or at least is explained by some of the commentary I made at that time 7 years ago.